It's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Welcome to the program. It's Your Turn, WISR 680 AM. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday, November 21st, a beautiful Tuesday, that is. I mean, just heard Tracy, we've got highs in the lower 50s, sunny sky. You can't really ask for a much better day, especially a big travel day for a lot of folks as we get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday. We've got another jam-packed show for you today as Dave does have the day off, his final day off. He will be back in action tomorrow, where you can catch him early in the morning at 5:30. But for now, it's Caleb Molzan and myself, and we've got, like I said, a show for you. We're going to open up with Ask the Vet. We've got Dr. Dennis Damon here, so we're opening up the lines as well. If you have a question that you would like to ask, we've got a lot of topics to hit on, so maybe your memory or mine will get churning as we work our way along in the conversation. Feel free to jump in at any time. 724-283-2525 is the number there. And also later on in the show, we'll be talking with Carol Miller. She's with the Butterball Hotline. Yes, in case you have any questions about how to cook your turkey or anything with the Thanksgiving meal, Carol Miller and the folks at the Butterball Hotline are there to help you out. I love that idea, Caleb.
Yeah, they've been doing it for now 30, this will be their 37th year.
That's wild. So we'll talk with her about that. But first, let's bring in Dr. Dennis Damon. Dr. Damon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Nice day out there. Very, very enticing for the autumn.
Exactly. Yeah. It really makes you feel like fall going on. So we do have fall coming up, and so let's start here with Thanksgiving rolling around, family coming over, weather getting colder. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there with questions in regards to some pet ownership and how to handle the cold weather. But with Thanksgiving coming up and company coming over, there's always a few questions about, for me, as a guest going into someone's home with the pet, how I should interact with the pet, or what are some of the do's and don'ts. So let's say we're having Thanksgiving dinner, okay, and the dog comes up, or the cat, or whatever, and I want to be the friendly guest that gets onto the right side of the dog and want to throw him a few scraps. Am I good to throw anything down there, or what are some of the things that I should avoid?
Well, you want to stay away from any of the bones. Because, and especially if you take the meat off the turkey and then you got the skeleton left, and if you leave it sitting around, or even if you put it in the garbage, sometimes that can open up a bag of worms for dogs, and they can get into the garbage, they can get into a plastic bag, they can get up on the counter, and get a hold of these bones and things, and it can cause some problems internally, perforations of the gut and things like that. So if you were going to feed your dog safely, anything that's the meat variety would be fine.
Okay, so I'm good to just dish out any type of meat that's
right.
Coming off the turkey.
Right. Don't
okay.
Feed any of the bones. You could feed necks if you don't like necks and that there's a bone or the bone cervical spine that's in there, but fortunately that's digestible to dogs. But otherwise, I would stay away from any of the legs, thighs, things like that where the meat is there and can expose the dog to some problems.
Dr. Damon, dogs can overeat as well, too, just like people, right? Because
right.
I'm thinking if Tyler, say we're going to Dave Mullarkey's house, Tyler's feeding the dog, Kayla's feeding the dog, everybody's giving little scraps. People don't realize how much is being given to the pet. That could be a problem.
Yes, in the circle, sometimes people can overfeed their dog and cause some digestive problems, especially the fact that they haven't had turkey the day before. Their digestive system is a little bit sensitive and can cause diarrhea, sometimes even vomiting a little bit. So you have to be kind of careful A little is best. A lot can be devastating. And then you also have to worry about, and some of these bigger breed dogs, don't overfeed your pets, because sometimes they can bloat, and bloating is where the stomach actually kind of twists on itself, since it has an attachment at the esophagus and an attachment at the intestinal tract going out. And if gas starts to build up in the stomach, they get the stomach aches just like we do. Hmm. And if they kind of twist their stomach, it could cause a bloat situation, something that you don't need on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Just another problem.
Yeah.
Are you usually busy on Thanksgiving? Do you have any, like, horror stories? Have you gotten calls late at night?
Not necessarily. I mostly opened emergencies and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's digestive upsets the day after. Sometimes a couple of years we've had some bloats happen. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, most generally people are very considerate and they try to keep things at a quiet pace for their pet. But always remember, they haven't been exposed to all this lush cookings that you're doing and things. And that changes the bacteria within the gut itself, and that's what can cause diarrhea. And sometimes that can get really serious if you don't watch what you're doing.
Now, when pet owners call you, do they have a pretty good idea of what's wrong, or do you get a lot of questionable calls, you know, talking about the symptoms? Do you find that pet owners have a good idea that they know what's wrong with their pet, or they're more questioning?
Generally, most of the time you get people coming in and their dog's out straining, but not moving any bowel and things, and they think he's constipated. Mm-hmm. But straining isn't really always constipation. It could be the fact that he has diarrhea and his gut is very sensitive, especially the colon. And so he's straining because the colon is very inflamed. And so when material and things from the gut starts to come back there, it starts to irritate that lining and things. And it's no different than us, where our colons get irritated and we'll strain and strain a little bit. Well, that's the same way with them.
Right. I know how uncomfortable it can be if we as humans overeat, so I can imagine the same discomfort for the pets.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Dr. Dennis Damon. He's with the Suburban Animal Clinic. They're on Route 8 South. It's Ask the Vet. If you have any questions and would like to jump in on the conversation, 724-283-2525 is that number. Holiday season is coming right after Thanksgiving, obviously, so a lot of people are going to be putting up their trees, a lot of Christmas ornaments going up. And this could lead to potentially dangerous situations with any type of pet. And you talked about ornaments on Christmas trees. What's your advice to pet owners in regards to that?
Well, especially cats. Cats like to climb in amongst the branches and things, and then they like to chew. And so they can chew on the electric cords and things and can get electrocuted if their teeth touch the right two wires and things. So that's always a little bit of a concern. Tipping the tree over if they get too high in the tree. We've had some calls on that. We've had where the dogs will take and actually crush those ornament balls, mm-hmm. that are on the trees. And always the fact that, you know, my dog never has done that ever before. What do you think enticed him to do that? And sometimes dogs get bored, see a nice dingling thing over there, and they want to kind of play with it and things, so they mouth it, and then they can end up getting some lacerations and things in the mouth.
What type of precautions, then, would you tell pet owners to take when they put up the Christmas tree?
Well, if they don't have big dogs, they don't have to worry. Most of the time you keep ornaments out of the reach of dogs, so like the first foot of your tree would just have lights on it and no ornaments or any edible arrangements such as popcorn strings and things like people like to string around the tree itself. You also have to be very cautious because the tree actually has to be fed water on a consistent basis, and sometimes some of the products that you put in to keep the tree nice and green, if you have a live tree, you have to be concerning about that because animals can go in there and drink the water, which is out of sight of you, but sometimes products that they put in there to keep the sap and things in the tree luscious and where it just doesn't dry out, they can contain products that can be very harsh on animals.
See, I didn't even think about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so that could actually make an animal sick if they drink enough
absolutely.
Of it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And even with the fact that getting plants and things in at Christmas time, anything that's curiosity will actually kill the cat to a certain degree. So animals are very curious, and if they see something changing in things, they'll go over and take an investigation in things. And cats like to chew, and they definitely can chew. Sometimes you receive violets in the mail from people that send you flowers and things. And within the group of flowers, sometimes the arrangements and things can contain certain leaves and things that it can be toxic to the animal.
Are there any ones in specific you know
well,
off the top of your head?
Poinsettias is one you kind of stay away from a little bit. Mistletoe's another one. Generally, as far as dogs go, if you put the plants up on shelves and things and not on the floor, you're pretty safe. But cats are a different situation in the sense that they may get into things. So you've got to just be ultra careful. Even though that you put them up on the shelf and the cat's not bothering them during the daytime, lo and behold, we go to bed, and the cats are now walking around in the house, and they like to go and investigate at that time, too.
Have you ever had any dogs choke on ornaments or anything like that, or even the popcorn, like you mentioned? Some people put popcorn around their tree.
I never have, but I always consider, because they do choke on their own play toys, and one of the bad thing is keeping rawhides around, and some dogs will chew on the end and get it very moist, and especially the flat rawhides. And when they chew on the very ends and things, they decide to swallow it. Then they swallow it, and the other end is dry, and so they don't have fingers and things, so they start to paw at the mouth. And they can choke and actually die. I've had two dogs, unfortunately, come in and they passed away, but they had these little rawhides in the back of the throat, and the owner didn't even know it. One happened to be, they've always had rawhides on the floor, and dog never ever had any problems, but it just takes that one time to lose a pet that you really gotta consider leaving these things around on the floor. Now toys that are hard, that's not a problem, but talking about the raw hides that they can really get soaked in things, and they can eat them and swallow them, and you know, you've got a matter of minutes to get them either that dislodged or to a veterinarian to try to get it out of there. And you stand to get bit because they are afraid they have something in the back of their throat. And most owners don't like to stick their hands in the in the throat. So it ends up coming to the veterinarian. But the best thing is to have precaution and just keep the raw hides up and only put them down or let the dogs have activity with them when you're around.
What's a typical call this time of year? Like the most, I would say, typical call that you get from pet owners in the winter? Does it change from the summer? Is there like a common maybe disease or issue with pets that you get a call for this time of year? Or is it wide-ranging?
It generally varies a little bit. Skin problems are always a big issue because dogs become more concentrated like people do.
Okay.
And they suffer from the same conditions that we suffer from, dry skin, the allergens and pollens and things that are in the carpet during the summertime have the ability to circulate because you open your windows up, but 9 times out of 10 you keep your windows closed during the wintertime, and the air and things becomes very polluted with these, and dogs can end up scratching. We have fireplaces that we start up get going, and sometimes burning certain woods and things can atomize certain things in the air, and dogs start to get dry skin. They start to scratch. They can get hot spots on the skin where they won't leave them alone. So it's a variety of things that we see.
Okay. We're talking with Dr. Dennis Damon. He's with the Suburban Animal Clinic. It's Ask the Vet, 724-283-2525 is the number if you'd like to get in, if you've got a question to ask the vet. The line is open, and we're more than glad to take your call. So we talked about Thanksgiving. Is there anything a pet owner should say to maybe friends or family when they are hosting people, just as a precaution when a pet comes over? Maybe something that someone that doesn't have a pet really isn't aware of.
Well, number one, you either have to warn people that you have pets in the house, because there are certain people that the pets don't get along with. They sense some sort of mystic vibe, and if you have a dog that is not quite settled with people and things, you might be wise in putting the dog up, which sometimes that is a very hard thing for people to do, to separate the animals from the family and things. But you don't want any encounters to happen during a holiday that can ruin the holiday season. Bites do happen very easily. There are certain dogs that I would say have a tendency to be on the scale, and they're not devastating bites, but they can be devastating in the sense that people get all upset if a dog does bite. The smaller breeds are generally very protective of their owners and things. So even though they look cute and things, sometimes people put their hand out to see if the dog was friendly and things. And what you're actually doing is offering something to him that is a possibility of him biting. The best situation is let the dog come to you and then pet from the back end, as opposed to the petting on the head, because if you pet from the back end forward, you have a better chance of getting your hand out of the way than you do if you pet on the front end, and they're very quick.
Is it true, you mentioned, when you're first walking into somebody's house, they have a dog or several dogs, not to put the hand right there. That makes sense. Let them come to you. Is it true that they have to kind of smell you or kind of get used to you, and you should just kind of stand there for a little bit and let them get used to you?
Takes sometimes some dogs anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes to check you out. A dog will come up to you and things and kind of, but when you reach over or bow or reach over, if he sort of skittles a little bit backwards, don't go towards him. Just, again, let the dog come to you and things. And then later in the meeting and things, you, as he comes over, or you can even see a toy, you got to be careful there, because that's a possessive thing.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can offer the toy to them, as long as they're not near the toy when you're trying to pick it up, because you can, if he's territorial or very bound to that toy, he could come back and bite too. So the best situation is to try to keep the dog out of the picture of the
when everybody's getting there,
right,
walking in the
and
house.
Things. It's nice to have pets in the house and things, but altercations do happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if your dog has never had the situation, we're dealing with dogs. Dogs have teeth. The only way they have a communicating to us is either barking or possibly biting very mm-hmm. quickly. That's their communications. And, you know, on the human side, we have yelling, shouting, and fighting if we disagree with mm-hmm. something. But in the dog world, there's only two, and that is either barking, or if it's a disagreement or something, you can get bit.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause they don't know it's Thanksgiving. You know, they don't know why all these people
absolutely.
Are simply showing up at their
they
house on a given day.
No odors, and there's food, mm-hmm. and they smell these odors and things. And so trouble always brews a little bit.
Mm-hmm. In their defense, I kind of have the same reaction before Thanksgiving. I start to get the smell, so I come down the stairs yelling and barking, you know,
yeah.
getting hungry for food. I lose all social consciousness. When I'm, you know, going to pet, you know, let's say I am at a friend's or a family member's house, and I am going to pet their dog, how do I know that I'm not petting it in the wrong way? Like, how can you get a vibe of how the dog is reacting to you petting?
If the dog stays and tolerates you, that's your kind of vibe that he or she is probably okay. When you pet them and they kind of cower a little bit, be leery, and mm-hmm. I would not try to pursue it. I would just leave him alone or her alone, and approach it in a safe manner, mm-hmm. which is don't even go and try to pet.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you, I know I had a cousin who just recently rescued a dog, and we know that the dog had been abused, and he's doing very well now in the new home. But my family was just at their house last weekend. The dog is fine with everybody in the family except for one individual. Do dogs have memories? I mean, we know the dog was abused at one point. Could it be possible that the dog doesn't like this one individual because he looks the same as the abuser or something like that? Or is it just a weird coincidence that the dog doesn't like just one person?
Well, beards are one thing that dogs do key on.
Okay.
They go mostly on what you're exhibiting. And you have pheromones in your body, and those pheromones is what the dogs read. And they're very, very good at reading it. I'm a lot better than human beings. And sometimes when animals don't like a person, there's obviously either that person is emitting a fear, even mm-hmm. though that they may not show it, they're emitting fear hormones. And that is what the dog keys on. I would say yes, if somebody abused an animal or beat an animal and things and got exposed to back to that animal, he would remember. But most of the time they key on certain things, certain mm-hmm. dimensions of the individual. And you know, like Sometimes I have to be careful because beards in animals are somewhat what they key on.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes men versus women, so your sex can make a difference. Some dogs like females more than they like males, and so you. On a day-to-day basis, when the animal comes into the clinic and things, first of all, they're in a new environment, so they don't know exactly why they're here,
mm-hmm.
and things. And then the second thing is, when I approach the animal and things, if he starts to cower towards the person and get underneath the chair or under and around their feet, I'll have the owner, if they're able, to lift the animal up and have them hold the pet for a little while until the pet gets acclimated to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because what really kind of happens in veterinary clinics is you know, either are there because you're sick or you're going to get some medicine. And sometimes animals do not like shots, just like people. So you have to be careful when you give shots that you don't give a shot, and that dog is keen on that. So every time he comes to your practice, now he's got a memory of something bad happening. So you want to try to make the experience of animals in your clinic happy, which is kind of difficult to do. But there's ways of doing that by having your receptionist, your technicians come in and make over the pet and things, so that they feel more so at home, and we use certain pheromones and things for pets at our clinic that we spray in the room before the animal gets in the room, then we'll spray again. Either the box or the animal with it, so that they kind of feel more relaxed.
That's interesting about the pheromones. And I mean, it hits exactly with the story I just told, because the person who the dog didn't like was very afraid of the dog. So I think the dog sensed that.
Yep. I mean, we use them very continuously in our clinic, and we actually give them to owners. There's plug-ins, little plug-ins that you can plug in for your cats if they have certain problems and things. And they do work in about 60% of the cases. They're going to work all the time, but they do work in about 60% of the cases on behavioral problems such as urination, defecation in the household. Sometimes that's fear-related issues. And so you can break these habits by simply using certain pheromones.
We're going to come back with Dr. Dennis Damon. We have to take a break. If you would like to join the conversation, 724-283-2525 is the number. If you've got a question to ask, we'd be glad to talk to you. Again, 724-283-2525. Our conversation on Ask the Vet with Dr. Dennis Damon continues right after this.
A quick word from your friends at Butler Motor Tours. A local company on South Monroe Street in Butler, online at butlerbus.com. Your headquarters for deluxe motor coach tours, outstanding show and theater packages, hundreds and hundreds of fun destinations. And with the holiday season upon us, here's a gift-giving idea. How about a gift certificate for Butler Motor Tours? You don't have to select the destination for the person that you're gifting. No. Just give them a gift certificate, and they can put it toward the vacation of their choosing. Get the details at Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. By the way, they're also taking a one-day trip down to the Pennsylvania Farm Show again on January 7th. Get the details on that at their website, butlerbus.com. For holiday gift giving, yes, Butler Motor Tours, 282-1000 or online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com.
Welcome back to Ask the Vet. It's Your Turn, WISR 680 AM. Tyler Friel, Kayla Molzan filling in for Dave Malarkey on this Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. We're talking with Dr. Dennis Damon from the Suburban Animal Clinic about some situations as we get closer to the holidays, as we get closer to cold weather, about just different pet questions. And if you have a question that you would like to ask, 724-283-2525 is that number. So today's a little bit different. It's about 50 degrees outside, but we've got colder weather on the horizon. And where I wanted to start with this is a lot of pet owners with older pets. It seems like there's a little bit more to do when it comes to cold weather. And I'll start with exercising. Let's go with old dogs. So if you've got an older dog, what are some of the things that you should do in cold weather when coming in terms of exercise with the dog?
Well, as everything else goes, less exercise during the wintertime because we can't get out and walk the road or walk in the parks and things simply because of snow and the cold weather. So we're kind of boxed up in the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time what you generally try to do is get your pet out and at least out for 5 minutes a day, three times a day. And don't just turn him out, and especially older pets, and expect them to do their urination and defecation, because they're just like you. It's cold. I don't want to get my feet wet. It's hard on my feet when I go out there, and they're less reluctant, but you can force them out there and put your coat on and go out. It doesn't hurt us to walk around a little bit and kind of shovel a little path out mm-hmm. for them. And keep it kind of open and things. You also have to kind of worry about when you put the salt down to open up the area and things, that it kind of gets into their feet. So they do lick their feet. So you want to be ultra careful about the type of salt or melting substance that you're using that is not harmful to your pet. And then the other thing, too, is long-haired dogs, you want to kind of prepare them for the winter. You might get them groomed in about the 6 weeks before Christmas if they've not been groomed all summer, simply because the coat can get wet and moist and cause some issues, odor problems and things. And then also in their feet, between the webs of their feet, is hair. And they can get little icicles in their feet. And that kind of freezes a little bit. And they can get frostbite toes and things simply by the little accumulation of the snow that gets kind of impacted into the feet itself. Now, this doesn't occur in 5 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the fact that we put the dogs out there for a period of a half an hour or so, and issues can develop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a law that just was passed that if the temperature gets below freezing, that you have to bring your pet in now, you could get fined because your pet is out and in this weather, blowing snow and things, and they are concerned that whether there's enough shelter and things for your pet. So I think that law was just passed here just within the last several months.
Yeah, you're correct. I was going to bring that up. I know this is the first winter under this new law, and they did set rules. I think it was at most your pet can be out for 30 minutes at most, unless you have a shelter like a doghouse or something. And even if you do have that shelter, it's a pretty short amount of time that they even want the dog to be able to be out there. Because, I mean, these cold temperatures, your dog, just because they have a coat doesn't mean they're going to stay warm.
Right. And issues can develop. Dogs, their bowls freeze, so they have no water for at least 8 hours. If you look at 9 to 6 in the morning, and then you have to go out and get the dish and bring it in and get the ice out of there and then put water in there. But water freezes no matter within a very short period of time. Food freezes too, alternately, if they leave some behind. So they don't really have the nutrition if they leave their food or if a dog picks throughout the day. If your dog is outside, it does freeze, and that changes the consistency of the food too.
I think they said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that hay in the dog houses is the best thing because...
If
blankets could get moisture and then they could freeze.
Right, absolutely. And hay has the ability to filtrate some of the water, and at least it lays on the floor, and the hay particles on the top will stay dry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're talking with Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic. It's Ask the Vet, 724-283-2525. If you would like to join the conversation, is joint pain an issue with older dogs in colder weather?
Yes, it is. Just like us, our joint pain is worse during the wintertime than it is in the summertime, simply because our circulation and things isn't as good as we get older. And so dogs suffer from the same thing. Cats do suffer from the same thing. So we've got to put both categories in there, although most cats are inside, except the strays and things like that are outside. But, you know, I have to be careful when you're feeding cats with this new law. If you're feeding a stray and you can't catch it and things, who's the owner?
Yeah.
You know, the owner is who's taking care of the pet.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, if your neighbors and things get upset with you because you're feeding cats and they know about this law, and then they can make your life a little bit miserable simply because you now have befriended the cat, but yet the cat doesn't want put into the an enclosure situation. They're happier being free, but the law doesn't state that. So
if a dog or cat were to have joint pain, what's the best way to handle it? Well, first of all, how do you know they have it, and what's the best way to handle it?
You can kind of tell because the way they walk. They walk stiff-gaited. They don't go up and down steps quite as easily as what they used to. Jumping up and down on things, their reaction time is very slow. There are medicines that can help animals to keep them moving. There's joint supplements that are on the conservative side and more on the homeopathic side that will actually thicken the synovial fluid to help with joint pain, but it doesn't do anything about the inflammation if they do have true arthritis. So they do need some medicine to control the inflammation that's going on too. So most likely, if your dog's 10 years old or approaching the upper quadrant, what I consider first 5 years, they're pretty young, healthy, they don't miss too many things, but then between 5 and 10, that's when arthritis seems to be a point of concern. And then from 10 to 15, definitely, I would say at least 80 to 85% of all animals have arthritis or joint problems.
And that's just commonplace. There's really no way to prevent that?
Well, there are ways of preventing it, but we don't think about that until the last resort. And when we start to see it, that's not really the time to try to start treating things. We always procrastinate, you know, even with ourselves. we say, oh, I won't go to the doctor today because I'm feeling better. But then as a few days roll by, you're not any better, so then you go see the doctor. Well, sometimes you want to get in and get it dealt with so that you don't get, have problems. And mm-hmm. and we all do it. We're gifted with it. We don't want to go to the doctor. So theoretically, you can prevent it. Sometimes you got to put these animals just as well as ourselves on joint supplements very early in our lives because, you know, in the summertime, we're beating our joints on pavements, mm-hmm. Running, jumping, and things, but we do nothing to help our joints. Mm-hmm. And then as we turn older, we start to think about it, but yeah, well, we'll get by with it. And by the time that we should be on it and it's really helping, it's already damaged.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, the best time is to start supplements is very early in life and keep them on it and use those as treats as opposed to buying treats that have calories in them. You put them on treats that have supplements in them to help things out, and you're doing a more of a benefit for your pet.
Hmm. Treats that actually help.
Yeah.
I like that.
And those are available? I mean,
they're available. You just have to think of it in relation because they're not mm-hmm. the treats aren't going to say, you know, we're beneficial. But you got to use your head and say, maybe I should be using these as treats as opposed to buying bones and mm-hmm. things like milk bone biscuits and the things that have calories in them.
Mm-hmm.
We want to use some supplements that have some nutrition. And it's going to benefit the animal.
We're chatting with Dr. Dennis Damon from the Suburban Animal Clinic just about pets and cold weather, the holidays coming up. Speaking of cold weather, a lot of bugs die in the cold weather. And I wanted to know if ticks are a concern year-round. Do they die off in the winter? How does that relate to Lyme disease with certain pets?
Actually, we're in trouble 365 days a year with most insects. And I say most insects because there are days in the winter, especially January and February, that occasionally you'll see a mosquito in your house. And you know, they're supposed to be dead.
Yeah.
And theoretically, our winters do not or haven't been as harsh as what they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 60s and the 70s, our ground was frozen. We couldn't put a shovel in the ground until March.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can put shovels in the ground all year round. It just is not freezing to the depth that it kills off these insects, and especially ticks, because all it takes is a warming spree of 60 to 70 degrees, and how many days during the winter time do we get days that we do get a 60 degree day or 70 degree
mm-hmm.
day, and that thaws out the mulch in the ground, and these ticks sit there and wait for your pet to come along, or they sit there and wait for a human being to go by hunting and things. And they latch on. And when you're talking about Lyme disease affects all phases of the tick. Most people say, well, my dog's never been exposed to any ticks because I've never seen any ticks. But if you put the period of a sentence in a newspaper and you kind of look at that period, you can barely see that period.
Right.
Well, the nymph and the larva are the same width as that period at the end of the sentence. And they can transmit Lyme disease as well as the adult tick. So even though your animal or you've never been exposed, you could have been exposed to the nymph or the larva.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, when it comes to like heartworms, and we don't have the heartworm problem here as bad as like up in Erie or down in West Virginia, but definitely Lyme's disease. I diagnose as many dogs positive every month, year-round, being exposed. Now, they don't have to have the disease.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can be perfectly healthy, but they've been exposed to Lyme's. What's happening is the immune system is dealing with it, and the dog is really healthy. But all it takes is that dog or cat, but we don't worry about Lyme's disease in cats, but we do worry about diseases in cats. But anytime your immune system drops and things, you're vulnerable to what is going on internally in the body.
Mm.
And one of the advantages that Lyme's disease does is it keeps working and working and working, and your dog's completely healthy, and then all of a sudden your dog comes in and it's off its food, and it hasn't eaten in 2 or 3 days, and it's not drinking any water, and it happens to be 7 years of age. So then you do a blood test, and here we find out that it's positive for Lyme's. Then you kind of say, well, Lyme's disease can cause other issues in the body. Perhaps maybe we should do a little bit of internal work to make sure that the Lyme's disease hasn't hit any of the other organs. And we find out your dog's in kidney failure. And Lyme's disease is one of the favorite spots that it hits is the kidneys.
Mm.
And once it hits the kidneys, we have no treatment for it. We have and can treat Lyme's disease, providing that the dog is healthy. But if it attacks one of the organs, we're in trouble.
So you're saying check the dog no matter, almost every time you go out, or every time you go out, when you come back in, check the dog for ticks.
Check the dog for ticks. And there are preventatives that you can use that are very, very good. There's a collar out that's an 8-month collar that I used to not swear by collars because I didn't think that they were very good. But this particular collar that treats for ticks and fleas, the Seresta collar, is excellent. It will protect your pet. And then you might want to consider if your pet's never been tested and see if it's been exposed. If it's mm-hmm. been exposed and it's healthy, treat it
mm-hmm.
and get the Lyme's titer under control, then vaccinate it so that you have internal protection as well as external protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you would definitely need that external protection because, I mean, your dogs are going out, running around, you know, it'd be almost, like you said, they're so small.
They're more exposed, and they're actually our sentinels to whether Lyme's disease is worse each year or getting better,
mm-hmm.
is because they go places you don't go.
Right.
You know, into the weeds and mm-hmm. the bushes back in there, and you may never go back in that area of your house, but your dog visits
mm-hmm.
there every day.
Right.
So
that's scary.
You mentioned cats aren't susceptible to Lyme's disease, or at least it doesn't affect them.
Doesn't affect them. They actually can be the culprit to a certain degree that carries the Lyme's tick, because generally speaking, any of the ticks that are around the facial area of cats, if you would take them and have them tested, most of the ticks and 70% of the ticks would be Lyme's positive. But yet, cats don't develop Lyme's. At least we don't fear right now of anything
mm-hmm.
tick-related that's associated with cats. It's mostly dogs.
Hmm. Is there any other type of pets that would be susceptible to Lyme's disease?
Well, horses are very susceptible. They can get it. Any of the dog-related animals, such as foxes and wolves and those animals, even the raccoons can give it, although raccoon is related to both dog and cat.
Hmm.
They can still get the disease, and they're sort of the culprits that kind of keep everything kind of stirred up in Mother Nature. It's the little mouse and the deer that keep the population of Lyme disease in our area.
Okay.
So, without the little mouse and the deer, we wouldn't have the problem, but it's out there, and that's what keeps these ticks and things vulnerable, and we're vulnerable to Lyme's disease. And it's not the first thing that they look for when you go in and you don't feel very good. There's other things that are there before you kind of get into the issue of what's a Lyme's disease in itself. And then there's other diseases that are starting to surface on ticks that are kind of moving into our area. Rocky Mountain spotted fever is a issue out west, but lo and behold, we're transporting things from the Midwest out into our area, and ticks are coming our way. And there was a particular people have, I don't know where you know what rabbit fever is, but it doesn't, it actually comes from rabbits, but it's a tick that bites the rabbit, and then it can bite you, and then you develop these weird skins problems and things, and it's not an issue that's common in humans, and it's probably the last thing that they sort of are looking for, because they're looking for other issues that cause skin problems and things. But if you kind of mention you removed a tick, that would help. But even that, you may have been bitten by a tick, but you never, you don't even know it. So there are other diseases that are starting to come into picture. Bacteria that generally are in certain areas and never move into the abdomen can move into the abdomen simply by insect and tick bites. So we're finding, as we are lessening the areas that animals have available to them, we're building more and we're crunching down the woods and things. Where these things are, they become more concentrated into the rural areas. We're being exposed. And so there are things out there that are coming into the picture that we don't even know about yet.
Well, that's scary.
Yes, it is. When these things start to move around, we're very vulnerable because we're a moving society.
How tough is it for you to diagnose, how tough is it to diagnose certain problems when it comes to pets? I mean, is it tough because, you know, as a human, I can obviously say what's wrong with me, point. When you're working with pets, obviously they can't communicate with that, at least verbally.
And since things are changing, like you said.
Right. And most of the time, 80% of the time, you're dealing with things that you've been exposed to history-wise. If yours, and I don't consider myself old, but I've been in practice for 36
experienced
years. So experience kind of tells you a little bit.
Sure.
20% of the animals are kind of head shakers. You kind of scratch your head. How did it get kidney disease? I've eliminated Lyme's disease. I've eliminated leptospirosis. I've eliminated everything in the picture that causes kidney disorders or liver disorders, and yet this animal is in trouble. What has stimulated it? And sometimes you don't know. You just treat the symptoms and try to help the animal and see if we can get it better.
We're talking with Dr. Dennis Damon. It is Ask the Vet. So if you do have any questions, we can sneak them in here in the final few minutes. 724-283-2525 is that number. I had read a story, and maybe I misinterpreted it, and maybe you're familiar with it, but with deer in the area, I believe from what I read, the disease was called wasting away disease. Yep. Is this an issue maybe that hunters should be concerned about, or just people that live in rural areas where deer may be around?
Well, wasting disease is where the animal really staggers. It just doesn't look healthy. Most of the time, the hunters are shooting animals that actually are somewhat healthy. It kind of is a flexible situation. But certain things can happen even in healthy deer nowadays that are kind of fearful. Be sure that you cook the meat that is prepared, and how it's prepared. You can't leave it out and sit and develop some bacterial on the meat, and then you freeze it and things. Mm-hmm. That can cause issues too. But wasting disease also is something that affects in the brain itself, and that's where the disease is a problem. And disease to cattle from deer, you have to be a little bit leery because you can't mix the two.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can develop issues intestinal-wise and problems. So you want to kind of, even though that wild deer are okay because we don't seem to be in an issue, but some of situations that I've seen where I've seen some deer placed in with cattle and things, and that's a major issue that you don't want to do. And sometimes these people that go out and they're what I call Saturday afternoon farmers and things, and they're trying to help the animals and things, and they can expose themselves very much to some problems.
Now, is that something humans should be concerned about? Is there any potential for harm if a human were to come in touch with a deer that happened to?
Yeah, you want to stay away from it because you always worry about rabies, one thing. And any bodily excrement, whether it be urine, feces, any cuts or scratches that you have on your hands, coming in contact with the animal. I've seen people pull the animals off the side of the road because they're struggling and things, and they get their hands kind of bloody. Things can happen. If you're going to do that type of stuff, you want to protect yourself and cover yourself so that you don't get into any issues and things.
We're talking with Dr. Dennis Damon, Ask the Vet. We've just got a few more minutes left. When it comes to other pets outside of dogs and cats, are there any other major issues that stick out in cold or weather that come to mind?
Well, it's mostly treat your pet as you would treat yourself out in Mother Nature. Try to provide it with warmth. Try to provide it with shelter. Make sure that it's well fed. Make sure it has plenty of water, especially during the freezing situations, and bring your animal in at least into the garage. You don't have to be into the house itself. Fix an area that if the animal kind of dirties or whatever, that you can clean it very readily, so it's not a hardship on you. And just use common sense during this winter time. And I feel that this coming winter is going to be a little bit harsh on us because of the way it's already manifested, snowing and things. I think Mother Nature is going to throw us a couple of things that I'd much rather be down south but, as opposed to up here, but I'll have to weather the storm here. So,
do those little sweaters that people put on their dogs really help, or are they just cute?
Well, I would say they're cute.
They're definitely cute. I can agree on that.
But they do help to a certain degree, yeah. But animals are a little bit more adept in controlling their temperature and cold weather than what we are. We have no hair on our bodies except for our head and our lower extremities, and so we're not very well protected, although we put clothes on and things which help us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more cute than anything. But in certain situations, I've seen animals where you put these coats on and things, yeah. And it makes them feel comfortable, warm, and secure,
mm-hmm.
too,
okay.
Which helps in the matter of the getting the animal a little bit more acclimated to mm-hmm. his surroundings.
That makes sense.
He's Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic. What's your contact information in case anybody wanted to get in touch with the Suburban Animal Clinic?
I'm just Route 8 South, 8/10 of a mile south of Keva Chevrolet and Bagular Buick on Route 8.
Well, there okay. you go. You can stop by and see him if you've got any questions or anything like that. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah,
we appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me.
We'll come back with a little bit more animal talk on a different side of it. Thanksgiving coming up. The Butterball Hotline. We'll chat with Carol Miller about that. That's all coming up next right here on WISR 680 AM.
Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the program, listeners. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey on WISR 680 AM. And I'm very excited for our next conversation. Our guest is Carol Miller, and she's with the Butterball Turkey Line. This is one of America's best concepts I think we've ever came up with. So, Carol, first of all, thanks for joining us. And if you could just tell our listeners what exactly is the Butterball Hotline.
Tyler, it is a phenomenon. It's hard to believe, but these phone lines opened in 1981. It was a new concept to have toll-free calls. That year, they weren't sure that anyone would call. There were six people sitting in our test kitchens. They had, you know, handheld phones. They had a Rolodex with the information that they were going to share. And they were blown away. And it's only increased year after year. The first year, people were kept saying, are you sure that I'm going to not have to pay for this call? Because we'd already been talking to them for 15 minutes, and they were worried that they had blown the grocery budget because they talked to us so long. And now, 37 years later, not only do we talk to people, we are using our fingers answering questions. They are texting us. They are emailing us. We are live chatting. We are responding to their post on our Butterball Facebook page. So basically, however you like to get your information, there's going to be an expert there to help you get that Thanksgiving turkey to your table.
Now, you said there were six people back in 1981. Is there an approximate number of people working the turkey line that you know of?
Yeah, there's about 50 of us that actually work the Turkey Talk line. We are all food professionals. We have had, you know, college courses in food and food preparation. We are, some of us are home ec teachers teaching at the junior high and high school level. We have people who are teaching at the college level food courses. We have people who are registered dietitians. We have chefs. We have people who do food styling. People have worked in research and development for food companies. So we, you know, when we come to the talk line, they are already food experts. But then we go to what we like to call Butterball University, and that's learning everything turkey. Everything turkey. There is no sweatshirts, or there's no, you know, pom-poms in football teams. But once you have gotten your certificate from Butterball U, you're ready to take calls, text, emails. You're ready to help America coast to coast to get those turkeys to the table.
Well, this is one thing I'm curious about, Carol, is the demographics of people who call. Is it all across the board? Because myself, I'm 23 years old, and I've never cooked a turkey. I would imagine there are a lot of people my age who have no idea what they're getting involved with, and they have to go to an expert source, which is you guys.
Does it sound a little stressful to be able to be the one that's cooking the turkey?
Yes, I don't know if I could ever do it.
Yeah. We took an online survey this year of 2,000 people. Some of them had never prepared a turkey before, and about 80% of them said that they would be stressed if they had to do it. Surprisingly, but yet not surprised, that 40% of people who had cooked a turkey, they were stressed too. And I guess that's why we've been around for 37 years. People are not used to cooking a 20-pound, you know, frozen thing that they get from the grocery store. And a lot of times they do it once a year, so they kind of forgot what went right or went wrong the year before. So right now what they're doing is they're calling to see how much turkey to buy. You know, if you're having a barbecue in the backyard, it's one hamburger for Aunt Sue, two burgers for Uncle Fred, or whatever. But it's different with a turkey. People are not quite sure. Usually, though, they do want generous servings for the holiday, and they do want leftovers. So if you factor those two things in, you're talking about a turkey per person, about a pound and a half.
Okay. So that's a ballpark figure right there, a pound and a half per person?
Right. Works for my family, and it works for the people that call us back and say, hey, that was great. You know, that's what worked well for us. Now, if you're having a big crew and it adds up to be, you know, like 30 pounds of turkey, you can't do that. It's too big. It won't fit in your oven. You can roast two smaller turkeys. You can roast a turkey and then maybe a breast of turkey, you know, whatever works for your family.
So let's say, and by the way, we're joined with Carol Miller. She's with the Butterball Turkey Talk Line. And so let's say you have a 20-pound turkey, and it's frozen. What is the approximate thaw time that people should take that turkey out?
Yeah, you know, the 20-pound turkey in the refrigerator will thaw in about 4 or 5 days. And we have a saying here is to buy early, thaw easy. And that means if you purchase your frozen turkey ahead of time, enough days that you can just slide it into the refrigerator and put it on a tray and then just not worry about it. It will take one day for every 4 pounds. But you also have what I like to call a grace period after it's thawed. You have an additional 3 to 4 days to thaw it. So don't procrastinate. We like to call the Thursday before Thanksgiving National Thaw Day. We just made that up. But it's a good reminder to people that you know, buy that turkey and get it into the refrigerator, and then you don't have to worry about it. You might have to move the ketchup and the mustard over and, you know, some leftovers to get it in there. But you don't have to worry about it until Thanksgiving morning when you open it up and it'll be completely thawed, and you won't have to yank out the giblets and the neck from the frozen body cavity. You'll be all ready to go.
Well, let's say you do, by chance, run into one of those panic situations where the turkey is not thawed by the time it needs to go into the oven. Is there any last-minute turkey tips you could give us?
Well, if it's early enough in the day, or if it's like the day before or so, or a couple days before, you can thaw also in cold water. And really what you do is take the turkey in its original wrapper. You put it in a big sink of water, big laundry tub. You can put it in a picnic cooler. Cover it with tap water, and then every 30 hours, change out that water. At the beginning, it's so cold because the turkey's so cold that it, you know, just gets colder than the thawing process will happen. So you change that every half hour, and then it's hours, not days, of thawing. It's a half an hour for every pound of turkey. So once you get it thawed, it needs to then go back into the refrigerator for that moment of unveiling and getting into the roasting pan.
So once it goes into the roasting pan, again, let's use the 20-pound turkey as a ballpark figure here. Baking time, how long should people give that turkey to bake?
You know what? A 10 to 18-pound turkey in that range, roast unstuffed in about 3 to 3.5 hours. It's not as long as most people think. And that's at an oven temperature of 325. I always like to talk to people when they're talking about, you know, how to roast the turkey or what method they're going to use, to remind them to get the equipment that they need so that Thanksgiving morning the turkey has a pan that it will fit into. You have to make sure that, you know, that it's not hanging over the edge or anything. If you have to go out and buy one of those foil pans, yeah, I'm sure you've seen them, Tyler, mm-hmm. at the grocery store. We recommend that you take that foil pan and put it like on a cookie sheet so that you can grab the cookie sheet for stability, because a 20-pound turkey in those pans are a little whoopsie-wah, you know, they can be a little bit of a problem. So make it easy on yourself. Also, you want to make sure that you have a meat thermometer, because you cannot look at a turkey. You cannot know that it's done by the time that it's been in the oven. You actually have to know what temperatures the muscle is. So find your meat thermometer before Thanksgiving. Make sure that it's working properly, and then it'll be all ready for you to test the turkey. Also, in that roasting pan, it's better if you have a rack. The rack keeps the turkey out of its own juices. When it does begin to come out, they'll brown nicely. You get those little brown bits in the bottom of the pan, and the air will circulate around the turkey a little bit better. So make sure you have that too. And one last thing is just some aluminum foil. The turkey, it comes with white meat and dark meat, right, Tyler?
Mm-hmm.
And they're very different types of meat. The white meat has less fat in it, and it cooks best if you cook it to 165 with a thermometer. But those dark thighs and the drumsticks, if you just cook them to 165, they're a little bouncy. There's a little redness in the joints. So once the turkey's been in the oven, 325 is what we recommend. Cover the breast after about 2/3 of the cooking time. That's usually when the turkey's starting to brown up nicely, just with a small piece of aluminum foil, about the piece of a computer paper, tent it over just the breast. Slows down the cooking of the breast, lets the thigh temperatures still cook at the oven temperature, and they'll get to 180 when the thigh is like 165, 170, and then they're both perfect.
So just to clarify, we're looking dark meat at about 185 internal temperature, and white meat about 165?
That's right, right. And then I don't want to forget that if you're a family who stuffs your turkey, the turkey shouldn't come out of the oven until the center of the stuffing, and that's in the big body cavity. That gets up to 165.
Okay.
And then you're ready to go. Let it sit for a good 20 minutes. You're ready to carve and enjoy.
So you said, and I know there's two theories on the stuffing.
Mm-hmm.
There's health concerns if we stuff the turkey, but again, it's called stuffing, so my thought should be it should be inside the turkey.
Right, you know, and some people call it dressing, and they put it in a pan, and it works out great, too. But my family, we still put stuffing inside of our turkey. It's a tradition, and just follow some guidelines to make it safe. You don't want to stuff the turkey the night before. If you've got raw ingredients that go into the stuffing, your favorite sausage or some oysters, some other seafood or something, cook those up completely and then store them into the refrigerator. They're all ready for you in the morning. And then just toss all those ingredients together and stuff the turkey lightly. And again, you know, don't take the turkey and the stuffing out of the oven until it gets to that 165, and then enjoy.
So what all goes in the Miller household stuffing recipe?
You know what? What I love in it is apples and raisins, but my husband doesn't like raisins. So, you know, there's two body cavities that you can stuff. There's the great big body cavity. That's where most of the stuffing goes with the raisins. And he gets a little neck cavity without raisins. So that's what's important. That's what's important. And families have their traditions, you know. So giblets or no giblets in the stuffing, that's a big thing, too, that people ask us about. But it's usually whatever grandma or great-grandma cooked. It kind of hands its way down until it's your turn, Tyler.
I'm still hesitant. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go there. I may hand it off to somebody else. But I want to ask you also, because you are the Butterball expert here, ideal Thanksgiving meal, what would all be on the dinner table by the time it's ready to eat for you?
Well, you know, this is one thing that I share with cooks all the time, because one of the hardest things is to get all of the food on the table hot, or on the buffet table hot. And usually the turkey is something that's slowing it down. Excuse me. What I always do is I prepare my turkey to come out of the oven 1 hour before I serve. It comes out of the roasting pan, goes on a platter, I cover it with foil, and then I insulate it to hold in the heat with like some clean towels. Then, because there's only one oven in the Miller house, then all my casseroles and everything go into the oven. I can make the gravy because I have the pan juices. And so all of that is going on. I can put the ice in the glasses for the table. And then right before I'm ready to serve, carve the turkey. It's hot. The gravy's hot. The casseroles are hot. And I ring the dinner bell.
The other thing I wanted to touch on, too, because we tried this 1 year, and I honestly can't remember how it turned out, was deep frying a turkey. What's the process there?
Wow, it's a great way to do a turkey, and it's also a great way if you have to do more than one turkey. You can have somebody either in the backyard, you know, with your propane deep fryer, monitoring that turkey, and then you can maybe have another traditional turkey in the oven. That's way you've got enough meat for everyone. If you're going to do it in the backyard, I always recommend people that they reread their instruction folders, because you have propane fire and you have a huge vat of oil, and those don't mix. You want to make sure for sure that the turkey is completely thawed so that you don't have any ice crystals, because, you know, water and oil really do not mix at those high temperatures. So read your instruction folder, very, very important, and stand by your fryer. Don't, you know, go in the house and watch the football game. Watch it on your cell phone and stand by your fryer. Also, Butterball actually has an indoor electric turkey fryer that has our Butterball name on it, and you can actually fry your turkey inside.
Wow.
It's great. A 14-pound turkey cooks in less than an hour, and it's fun to do that. You can add some Cajun spicing, some rubs on it to give that second turkey that you're making a little different flavor than the one that comes out of the oven.
Well, Carol, I appreciate your time. Really enjoyed our conversation. Again, things that I don't know about turkeys. Again, just someone who's never cooked one before. So what's the phone number if some of our listeners have additional questions that they can call the Butterball Turkey Line?
Oh, I'd be glad to share that. It's not just the phone number anymore. You can reach us at 1-800-BUTTERBALL, which is our phone number. You can log on to butterball.com, where you can watch how-to videos and how to carve and how to thaw and everything. You can actually text us. So if you're in the grocery store and you want to know how much turkey to buy and you're not sure, you can text us at 844-877-3456. On butterball.com, you can also log in to chat with us, do live chats or email. And then if you have a really cute family and a really great turkey, if you want to send us a photo, you can post this on our Facebook page. Lots of ways to get a turkey expert and their advice.
She's a graduate of Butterball University, and she is doing the great work that keeps us Americans full on Thanksgiving. She's Carol Miller. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, and we'll be back right after this.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 17, 1, 7. The pick 3, 4, 67, 4, 6, 7. Pick 4, 3, 9, 3, 9. The pick 5 is 0, 5, 2, 8, 3. Wild ball for each of those is 6. The treasure hunt, 15, 17, 18, 24, and 26. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Well, the holidays are coming, and that means your office will start receiving tasteless tins of popcorn, boring baskets of fruit and nuts, and a plethora of 2018 calendars. Ugh. Give your clients something better, something memorable, and something that says Butler. Like a custom gift box from Cummings Candy and Coffee, you can choose from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips, pretzels, graham crackers, and cherry cordials. Add in a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Call Barry for your corporate order. Cummings Candy and Coffee, serving the Butler community since 1905 and now in 3 locations.
The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot has delicious, all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens to make your holiday meal special. Their birds are handled with extreme care and are specifically fed non-GMO grain and are preservative and additive-free. Buy your turkey frozen today or get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. For the tastiest, highest quality turkey or chicken, call the Jones Turkey Farm, 724-352-2450, or visit them online at jonesturkeyfarm.com. The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, quite simply the best. Did you know that Pennsylvania leads the nation in auto collisions with deer? Not a surprising fact if you live in Butler County. It's obvious that your car and the deer are damaged, but what about you? You may have injured your neck and not know it. An impact of only 8 miles per hour is enough to cause soft tissue damage and mild whiplash, which is not uncommon after striking a deer with your vehicle. If this happens to you, visit Applewood Chiropractic Center today for treatment of acute and chronic whiplash. Applewood Chiropractic Center, Thorn Apple Drive in Butler. Call 724-283-0518.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Attention Alexa users, did you know you can listen to WISR through your Amazon Echo? That's right. Alexa, play WISR.
Playing WISR.
WISR is proud to provide you with the music you love on the devices you use. Radio, computer, tablet, smartphone, and now your Amazon Alexa-enabled device. WISR, we're everywhere you are. Just ask Alexa.
Big thanks to Carol Miller and Dr. Dennis Stamen to coming on the show today. Ask the Vet. We got a lot of conversation done in there. You're always amazed at how much you don't know about pets, especially if you don't own one. I don't have pets. You know, I've got a lot of questions about it because it's not something that I have. So a big thank you to him for coming on and answering some of our questions. Also, a big thank you to Carol Miller from the Butterball Hotline. Big fan of the Butterball Hotline. And I'm sure that time that I actually have to make the turkey, I will get good use out of it because I have no idea how to do it. And there are different ways to do the turkey. And a lot of people have their own unique ways of going about it. And a big thank you to one of our sponsors on the show, Jones Turkey Farm. That's where I was at yesterday to go get my turkey, 26 and a half pounds. I'm taking it to give to someone else to cook. The parents are going to cook the turkey, but I was responsible for getting it. If you do want to go get some really good turkeys this year, stop by the Jones Turkey Farm. They are in Cabot. You can get it up to the last moment. They've got fresh turkeys right now, so you can just keep it in the refrigerator right up until the time that it is to cook, or if you want it frozen and can get it thawed in time for Thanksgiving on Thursday, or hey, maybe you've got an event coming up Friday, Saturday, they do that too. So make sure you stop by there, 240 Jones Road in Cabot, really just off of Bonnybrook Road. They've got some great turkeys, and we're really looking forward to it. 26 and a half pound turkey. I guess the estimate, Carol said, is about a pound and a half per person, but if you're like our family, you really like the leftovers, and so that's why we went large with the 26 and a half pound turkey. We'll just see how much leftovers are actually around by the time we finish that up. A little bit of breaking news, and I'm sure CBS will have some of this at the top of the hour. Oh, this is breaking news as well. So two organizations have actually fired Charlie Rose. CBS has terminated their contract with Charlie Rose following these sexual misconduct. And CBS News President David Rhodes saying there's absolutely nothing more important in this or any organization than ensuring a safe professional workplace. So Charlie Rose gone from CBS. Charlie Rose also gone from PBS. They have terminated the deal with him as well. So the sexual allegations that Kayla and I talked about, I think, last Monday, with new ones coming forward every day. And, you know, I think every day that I've been in for Dave, listening to the top of the hour news reports on CBS, just different celebrities, different actors, different politicians, continued to have accusations against them, and a lot of them have seen to be quite credible, and a lot of the people that have been accused have come out and admitted that they've been wrong. Charlie Rose was one of them, and you know, we were talking around the office today. Charlie Rose, here's a guy that's hosted a morning show for a long time, a guy that has become one of the more credible journalists that you can have, and this doesn't take away from his credibility as a journalist, but it takes away from his credibility as a man of integrity, someone that you could trust on air. That doesn't happen. CBS News has decided to part ways with Charlie Rose. So that story evolved rather quickly. And, I mean, Charlie Rose has got to be close to 70 years old if he's not over that barrier already. But I'm sure you'll be hearing more news about that at the top of the hour. Dave Mullarkey is back tomorrow on It's Your Turn, and they will kick things off with Open Talk. So if you'd like to get in and reconnect with Dave after his 7 days off, feel free to do so. That will kick off tomorrow's program. He'll also chat with folks from the Butler Little Theater. They've got another show coming up, and so he'll have a conversation with them around 1 o'clock. And then he'll also have an author by the name of Laszlo Kahnheim on to talk about his new novel. So that's all coming up on the It's Your Turn program tomorrow. Big thank you to all of our guests that have stopped by in the time that we've been filling in for Dave. A big thank you to Tracy Morgan and Ryan Saylor for also some of the conversations that they've held with some individuals around the community. We've had a really good time this past few days, and then going back to last week, I think we touched upon a lot of topics that hopefully you were able to listen to or give a listen to. And if you missed one of the shows, you can go find it at WISR680.com. That's where we've got all of our podcast page set up. So all you have to go do is go to the Listen Live tab, and then find your way to the podcast page, and you can hear the latest It's Your Turn. You can hear the most recent Let's Talk. You can also listen to us live. If you're out and about, maybe out of the country, whatever you may be doing, you can listen live via your phone. And we also have the app available on your phone. We've got high school basketball season coming up, and when I talk to a lot of folks who are fans of these high school teams, they really like the app that they're able to put onto their phone and listen to the game even in their house if they don't have the radio around. So if you are finding or want to get that for your smartphone, you can go to the Google Play Store or the App Store. Just type in WISR or any of our family of radio stations, WBUT, the Rock Station 97.7, and you can download the app for your phone, and then you can actually switch stations between all three as well. So it's pretty convenient stuff. And of course, as you've been hearing, we are on Alexa activated devices. You just have to put the Butler Radio News skill on there, and you can get your latest news update, your sports, your weather. We're trying to get about as digital as possible. I am trying to embrace the digital age, and I've done a pretty good job of it, but there are still